Welcome to Flutter Spaces. The date is March 6th, 2024. Ray, how are you doing?
Oh, I'm doing good. How are you, Matt?
I'm doing all right. Lots of things to work on.
How's your housing project?
It's that one seems to be complete. What happened was, at least for that one, I needed to upgrade the PG&E line so that I could have more amperage for future solar panels. And PG&E came out the first time and they're like, you need to cut down this 100-foot tree in your front yard for us to run the line. And I said, no, not going to do that. And eventually convinced them to come out and do the work without cutting down the tree. And then so that changeover to the updated line is what had my power out last week. So I couldn't do the spaces.
Nice, that's a big win.
Yeah, I thought they were gonna have me over a barrel because PG&E is a wonderful example of a government monopoly. Their real customers are California state politicians. So when they tell you have to do something, usually they don't change their mind. But fortunately, this time they did.
Yeah, you saved a tree.
Yeah, well,
That's always nice.
mostly I saved probably the $10,000 it would have cost me to cut down the tree.
Yeah, getting those trees, man. The trees are they're brutal. Like competitively, they're the apex predators of nature, of plants, and they are very expensive to remove and difficult to.
Yep. So that crisis is averted and the project moves on. But I thought today we might, well, Ray, you might have some stuff you wanted to go over based on some stuff I saw on your Twitter feed, but I thought maybe we'd also talk about this Dart AI SDK, or more specifically the Gemini SDK for Dart, because it was kind of this somewhat secretive announcement. There were some whispers that there was going to be an announcement, and then finally this video showed up where this SDK was announced. And I have to admit a couple things. First, I haven't seen much of anybody talking about it. Second, I haven't heard of anybody planning to use it. And third, I myself don't know where I would make use of it. And so I'm curious if this was an expected big announcement on the part of Dart and Flutter, when in reality, maybe this thing is just going to sit here and collect dust.
Yeah, those were great questions. First of all, I want to get a link to this SDK. So I actually can't find the link. Just going on pub.dev and searching, like I search AI, I search, Flutter AI, I search Dart AI, and I actually can't find it.
So I'll paste the GitHub link. That's what I'm looking at. You might try searching either for Gemini or searching for generative AI Dart.
Okay. I think I see something now. But this is funny. The first result for Gemini is a command line application for finding duplicate files. And but the second one is called Flutter Gemini. Is that the one? Or wait, that's not the one either.
Yeah, I think it should just be for Dart. Is it maybe not on Pub for some reason yet?
Sorry, I'm pretending to be confused, but I am actually also a little bit confused because I actually don't know. I'm very confused as to which one is the actual package.
Yeah, like I said, I'm looking at the GitHub repo, so at least from that regard, I can see what it, I also. By the way, Ray, how do I get stuff in the tweet box thing here? I responded to my own Spaces post. I thought it was going to show up here, but it didn't. How do I get stuff to show up here?
So you need to go in. So if you click on the replies, you'll be able to see your tweet, and then you need to press the share button in the lower right-hand corner, and then in the share card, you'll see share post to Matt Carroll's space.
Let's see. Did that come through? Okay, that came through. So that post right there has the GitHub link to the package.
Awesome, awesome. Okay, so that is actually none of the packages that I was looking at in pub.dev. So that's a lesson for me, I guess, or maybe for Google to figure out like this discoverability issue, perhaps. But that's besides the point. Okay, so we do have a link. Nice.
I want to say welcome to those who are joining us. I see Marco's in the audience. Welcome, Marco. Always good to see you here. And Ray, did you watch the announcement video? I actually don't think that I did, so I don't know how they tried to sell it, but did you happen to watch that video?
I watched some parts of it, but I don't remember anymore. So, I'd be in the same boat as you are.
Well, maybe we'll have to take this thing for a spin, force ourselves to use it and see if there's anything hiding in there in terms of value. It seems a little odd that they would launch something like that, make such a big deal about it, but then not have any companies ready to go to show us what they've built with it and not necessarily have any specific use cases in mind, just kind of drop this tool on the community and hope that someone figures out what to do with it.
Yeah, that does seem a bit odd because, okay, so based on what I'm seeing on pub.dev, there is the Gemini Google SDK. So the Gemini SDK is comparable to the OpenAI SDK. So if you're familiar with building a Flutter app that uses OpenAI and, talking to the OpenAI API, that's Google Gemini has an SDK that does the same thing for you there. That is s different from this generative AI SDK, which I am actually seeing for the first time in pub.dev. So I'm gonna be, yeah, I'm just being honest here. I thought their announcement w was the Gemini SDK for Flutter. But no, it's actually the Google Generative AI SDK for Flutter, which is new and different for some reason.
Yeah, I'll admit I don't know all the ins and outs of what's going on in this space. I guess I can't keep up. It's a breakneck pace. Everything's changing every day. So once in a while I just take a look and stick my toe in, and that's about as far in as I've gone. If any of you in the audience would like to talk about these things, by all means, come up on stage and join us. You can tell us what you're building with this package, or what you think you might build with it, or other similar packages and AI systems. I'm curious what kind of value people are actually getting out of all this AI craze that's going on. So we'll leave that invite open, and maybe when more people join, we can repeat kind of that question. But Ray, were there any topics that you wanted to discuss today as well?
Yeah, I apologize for being a bit sick and also just super overworked the last few weeks, which is why I wasn't able to join. I'm finally caught up now, and I'm sort of the thing that's really pushing me on here is I feel like we have to work on growing these spaces, and also that we need to demonstrate like some level of leadership and some level of leadership here. The world really lacks powerful and effective leaders. And if you do a little bit of leadership, I think we can build something really good here. And one of the reasons why is there are a lot of bad takes, and also there's a lot of things that I don't like seeing on happening in Flutter or inside of this Flutter community. But most of all, like there's I do want to build this community up. I want Flutter and the people here to be able to help each other and to actually have some real tangible benefits each week, you know, coming out of on Twitter or, you know, in your own development career or in your own, you know, business, etc. And that got me thinking a little bit in terms of like the gatekeeping. So one thing I really like about these spaces that we do is anyone can join. But because anyone can join, it seems like also not a lot of people are joining sometimes as well. But this time we didn't really schedule it too far in advance. So that's something we need to work on. But I did see that there was like a Flutter organizers conference. So that was limited to, I guess, just Flutter conference organizers or something. But they had, so that's like, you know, gate kept, right? So that wasn't an open invite. And people, you know, asked, hey, how can I, you know, join this? And, you know, it's kept a secret. So like you aren't able to really join those. But they were able to, they had like 50 people or something in their call. So what we're building here, I want it to be somewhat effective. I want us to be somewhat valuable. And if we're not doing that, I feel a little bit bad because, Matt, your time is super valuable. My time is super valuable. And we get a lot of really great people in here, too. And everyone's time here is, like, quite valuable. So what are your thoughts, Matt?
I guess I just need to know specifics. At a high level, that kind of thing is always true and always ideal. I don't think anybody wants to waste time, and I don't think anybody wants to think their time isn't valuable. The question is, if we want to talk leadership, leadership involves a direction. It involves a goal. So we need to understand what those goals are and then understand the mechanisms by which a leadership effort would get us there. Now, before we dig a little deeper into that, I do want to welcome Simon Lightfoot to the stage. I'm happy he was able to join us today. Simon, at any time, you can feel free to jump in. I also want to say hi to Mike, who looks like he's joined us. Mike, everyone in the audience is welcome on stage. So if you want to come up and ask questions, make comments, chat, feel free. But Simon, is there anything you'd like to jump in and mention or talk about now that you've joined us on stage?
Well, sure. I was going to say that I've just literally jumped in. So I got the end of what Ray was talking about there. So yeah, you know, I think everyone's trying to build. We've been trying to build a community for a long time, you know, and we try our best. But I think we suffer from the same thing about just not scheduling and not, you know, everyone seems to be quite busy. So just not scheduling enough time ahead of time for people to join. But we do get a reasonable number of people visiting the stuff that we do. With the Hump Day Q&A and everything. But yeah, regarding the topic here, does the .AI SDK even matter? I'd say no. I think the whole thing around that sort of if I'm honest, like that I know, you know, there's a big push inside Google for you know, Gemini and AI and so on. Of course, all the teams and departments are going to be pushed to do something with AI. And it make me, oh yeah, we can do a release just around .AI and blah, blah, blah. And, you know, out comes this lovely .AI SDK release. But I mean, we could have called the REST APIs anyway, right? Like there's not like a big, doesn't really do much from that side of things, right? Like it's just a big wrap-up really. Yeah.
I think we were talking about that a little bit before you got here. And I think I kind of felt like I was at the same place with regard to that package. I pointed out that on the one hand, they had, the kind of Dart team, Flutter team, whatever, announced it in this somewhat secretive way where it's like, oh, we have some surprise announcement. What's it going to be? And they dropped this video. And then, and of course, a bunch of people on Twitter for about a day posted about it. And now I haven't heard anything beyond that. I haven't heard anything that people are building with it. I'm not building anything with it. I don't, when they launched it, as far as I know, there weren't any companies who had uses ready to go.
I was going to say, I think regarding the AI stuff, don't get me wrong, it's great. But the applicability in the app space is limited. So what I mean by that, it's the same as like VR, right? It's like VR is great. When you use it, it's great. But what can you build with VR? What is effective use of VR, right? Or AR or whatever, right? And it's the same thing with the AI stuff, you know? What can you, like, chatbot? Like, what is it that you're actually trying to put into your app that can make effective use of AI? Like, image recognition? There's certain things that are machine learning versus AI, but they have very specific use cases, and most apps don't need it.
Right. Yeah, so I guess we'll see the direction that it goes, but that what you just described seems to be what I'm actually seeing in reality. There's the hype. There's what people want to believe. Oh, this is the future. This is crazy value. This will solve all the problems. And then I observe the behavior, and what I see is people not really making much use of it, not much value being created. Now, enterprises can always be a bit different because enterprises are doing so many things at such a high scale, maybe kind of drawing kind of conclusions from massive amounts of data is useful at that level. But I would guess that at least for many of us who aren't working in the enterprise, we're working for agencies, we're working for startups, we're working for small companies. I don't know for us how useful it's going to be. But Simon, let me shift back to what Ray was talking about, because we do have a good opportunity right now to talk to you. You are one of the co-founders of the Flutter community, capital F, capital C, the actual organization. What has your experience been like over the last few years trying to grow this Flutter community organization as a place for the community to kind of come together? And also, what have you been trying to achieve with it? What value have you wanted specifically for Flutter developers and Dart developers to get from this Flutter community organization?
All right. Well, I'll give you a bit of history on it first, so people know where we're coming from. So, we're going to go all the way back to alpha days of Flutter just for a second. And at that point, there was very much like there's nothing in the SDK was settled. Like the ways of interaction between widgets and various things, and it was almost a free for all, right? Like there was that very aspect of everything was in flux during alpha. It didn't get settled, so there was this idea of constant stream of changes, constant feedback loop with the team, the Flutter team. It was a different way of dealing with the project. Like at that size, it was a small size project, and in what it is now in terms of user base, right? Things like breaking changes were a thing that you would just happen every day. It's alpha, right? So the sort of community came around from an aspect of communication originally. So we found that the only way of communicating with other people at the time was Gitter chat, which was a popular form at the time. It was a popular form at the time of attaching chat to a open source project on GitHub. Frankly, it just wasn't, you couldn't do like topics of conversation. You couldn't set up separate channels. It was like one big chat for everyone. And that's just impossible. There's no threading in conversations. It was just not really workable as a solution going forward. So we were like, what can we do about this? So just a bunch of us that were sort of answering questions, they got together and let's build something, right? Let's do something. Now, there was this notion of we call ourselves the community, right? The people around Flutter. And then we said, okay, let's build a brand, the Flutter community, right? This is it. As I said, the capital F, capital C, right? We started putting together pages, website, various other things. We realized there was a lot of content that we wanted to share. So we set up the Medium. We realized that there was a bunch of packages in the community that, not necessarily third-party packages, kind of second-party packages in the sense that they're not made by the Google team, but they're made by people in the community that have actually committed code to the Flutter repository and so on. So we started getting those together. And we just basically just trying to join the community together, trying to bind it together. And that kind of sort of led into several different things. Like, you know, we started doing a Zoom call for Hump Day. This was the original stuff. And we would literally do a Zoom call where everyone just share their screen and we'd all be coding together, suggesting changes. It was a different way of doing the show. And it was just, again, it was like, 30 to 50 people, weekly, just playing around on Zoom, having some fun. That was quite the early days. And since that point, you know, various things have changed, you know, various different, you know, projects in the community have started up. And, you know, we've been petering along. I want it to be more, but frankly, like some of us just don't have time at the moment anymore. Like what's happened is we always wanted it to be busy, and then it got busy, and then it's too much. So I think there's still an avenue of what I'd like to see is one of the big tenets of what we're trying to achieve was not like pub.dev. I will be sorely upset if pub.dev turns into npm.js, right? If we're dealing with just tons of packages and it's all over the shop and it's not well maintained. And sadly, it's going that direction. And so we set up with the Flutter team to sort out Flutter favorites and some other things to try and like drive this notion of people trying to take ownership on packages and working together as a community. But again, it's really difficult.
Let's focus on that point for just a moment, and then by all means you can continue. But it's good history. But the reason that I wanted to just pluck that one, and Ray, you can jump in here in a moment if you want to add to this. But you've just established a value system, and maybe you don't even realize that's what you did there. But that's a value system, valuing a somewhat curated, a somewhat maintained garden of packages versus the kind of wasteland of packages that I think you and I would describe and kind of the NPM world to be. How do we, so by the way, there are developers among Flutter and the Flutter and Dart community who do not agree with you and me on this. They think it's fine to dump whatever you want in pub and that is no problem. And hey, just use the search field and use the filter system and the more the merrier. How do we effectively make the argument for more of that that garden that we all take care of as opposed to the dumping ground?
It's difficult, right? Because you have this notion of ownership on a package, right? You have this notion that if someone is maintaining something, it's theirs to maintain. It's also there forever, right? In pub. You can't expect things to last forever. But I do think that there needs to be and this is down to pub.dev changing. And we've had conversations, that's community and plugin authors. There's been there was an unconference between plugin authors that Google invited people to that basically asked us to give them feedback on how they could improve pub.dev and the ecosystem as well. There were several references to things that like, obviously the from a package author, you want to know, is your package being used, right? And how popular is it? Things like that, you know, that brings some of that YouTube magic, should we say, to pub.dev. But it's very difficult because the way packages are used, right? So, you know, you do a pub get and you do a clean and a get. You've just downloaded the package again. It inflates the numbers. So you know, it's a very difficult thing to deal with. But, you know, maybe there's something there in the future. There is also this notion of, you know, how alive is a package? Because, you know, you may have some code that adds functionality. Let's say you add, sorting functionality to a list, right? Or some special sorting extensions or something. Now, that code is done, right? You make a package, you release it. It doesn't get updates. It doesn't need updates. Maybe it gets updates with a major version change when the language deprecates a feature you're using. But for the most part, it doesn't get releases every week. It could be a year out of date and still be valid code that's very workable, that is good code, right? So then the kind of question revolves around, can we mark packages as dead? Can we say that these haven't received updates in a long time, so they should disappear off of pub, or at least not show up in the top of the search results, right? And then we're going to come into this thing of not everything's equal then. So it's difficult, right? It's difficult. Like, you can imagine the difficulties around this. But I think if we don't learn from the other failures in packaged ecosystems around other languages, then we're doing it wrong, right? So I think it'd be really good to get other people that had experience in the other package ecosystems to speak up and say what they didn't like and what they liked. But I don't think it's going to be perfect. But at least we can do better than we got now, right?
So I think a lot of those points are very much about Pub itself. I'm kind of concerned about the developers who are publishing to Pub. You know, there are so many developers who will fork other existing projects, and they'll change 10 lines. They might not even alter the README file, and they'll just publish it under a new name.
Yeah.
And I think I posted on Twitter about this a while back, where I was going through pages and pages of results that were all fundamentally the same thing, just forked, almost no updates, clearly not maintained, just nothing reputable at all. It was just a god-awful mess. And so the people who say that, well, the more variety, the more problems are solved, I would say that actually, no, what I'm seeing is a growing variety, and somehow the solutions are even worse. At least if there were one or two packages, everyone would know where updates and fixes need to happen and should happen. But when you have 50 minor variations of the same thing, it turns out they all just suck, and they all suck forever.
So exactly. I mean, we went over this problem of there should be nothing wrong with doing that, especially when I give you a good example where people do that is that the original package author doesn't respond to their PRs, doesn't respond to their stuff. So they want to republish it. But what we, to really solve this, what we actually need is a SKU system, right? Something which is like, this is a variant of an original package. There needs to be something like that links it together, but you know where it came from. Think GitHub forks, for example, right? There should be something like that which can link them up. Something more, makes it more official in that sense to do that kind of thing. I don't know if we're ever going to get rid of that behavior, but definitely there should be a downvoting system, right? There's certain things that you go on there and go, this is not helpful. And upvoting we have, likes we have, but there should be definitely a sort of at least a way of crowdsourcing that kind of result about what packages are spam or what is junk, and then getting rid of it off of Pub. If the last thing we want to do is be able to search Pub and not find what you're looking for because there's just lots of junk that come up, or even worse, finding a package. Let's say, again, here's a scenario. The original author doesn't respond to PR. Another person publishes, let's say, a second version. They just stick a number 2 at the end of the package name. Who knows? Then the original package author implements that PR, right? And does further changes and improvements. It's down to us as the person who looks at the package to determine which one we want to use and work out that diff, essentially, right? Whereas the new package doesn't get deprecated. It doesn't get, like, it should. Now we can actually do that on Pub now. You can mark up packages, don't appear in the search results and everything. But again, it's down to that person who forked to do that, right? And it's just not going to happen. So I think, there's a management around Pub, right?
Yeah. So it's now, I guess, so what I'm hearing is that you aren't leaning towards a world of really creating any restrictions on any of this stuff. You're suggesting that there are mechanisms that could and should be added to Pub, which effectively filter out all of this noise. Is that right?
I think filtering is one part of it, but then obviously at some point, you know, it can become deprecated or become removed from the system. I don't see any reason with that, but there needs to be, you can't expect Pub, you can't expect Google to essentially do all of the this one of the reasons why I did the community stuff, right? So you can't expect Google to have to review every single package and do everything. Like it's essentially a numbers problem, right? So it becomes a problem of crowdsourcing that solution. And it has to come from Pub. Now, it should be that we can report packages. Like, you can already do that right now. You can actually, but the process of reporting is via email. It's in the information on Pub. You can go in there and you can say, this package is junk, it's spam, you should delete this package or whatever, and send them an email. And they'll take it under advisement, and then it's up to Pub to do that. But it's equally, like, imagine you're the package author, right, of a very valid use case, right? And it may not have had updates for a long time, but it's a very reasonable package to have. Then it's down to, you know, some other third party to just say, okay, I don't like your package, we're removing it. That's not really where we want to be, I think. Like, it shouldn't be down to Google to say yes or no to something. It should be, if it's policy, if it's by policy, sure, and it's upfront. So we say you can't do this, or if you do this, there's a chance your package might be removed. Then at least Google's been upfront about that's how your package might be perceived, and then you have the choice of publishing to pub.dev or not. But equally, when it comes back to like the crowdfunding side, then it can be down to the community at large to go, we don't like this, but or like this, right? Conversely. And that's kind of where this whole sort of discussion around this that we've had over many months, over in various conversations, comes back to the notion of how can we promote certain packages? And that's where Flutter Favorites comes into it, right? It's one of the reasons why it came around, was us to go, let's work with the package authors, make sure that they're like versioning their packages really well, their documentation is up to scratch. There's a whole set of standards that we run past. It has to go through a technical review with people outside Google and within Google to actually have it get marked with as a Flutter favorite. There's a whole process. And in doing so, we make that a stamp of approval, and they can lose that stamp. If they don't maintain the package, they lose the Flutter favorite, right? So it's not just something that you earn and you've got, right? Like a trophy. It's a stamp, like a license stamp of approval that can be revoked if if it doesn't get kept up to date. So that, we hoped, is the kind of solution around this, right? You know, you can have all this other stuff going on, but at least you can trust this like brand. You can trust this list of packages. And, you know, we also say that anyone can submit a package, right? You can submit your own packages for approval. Doesn't mean it will become a Flutter favorite, but you can submit it and it will go through the process that we have, which we think is very open, very, very clean, and very what's the word? I don't know. Yeah. I can't even think of the right word. But yeah, anyway, you get my point.
Hey, Simon, I have some questions about the Flutter favorites, and thank you for joining. I shared the link to the Flutter community in the tweet box, so there it links to quite a few resources, and it's very well organized, so thank you for that. So I have a few questions about the Flutter favorites, because I've seen that badge, and I don't know like what the criteria is, or you know, what type of gatekeeping is there? All I know is that there aren't very many Flutter favorite packages. So that, to me, feels somewhat bad, because it makes it feel like it's very exclusionary. And new packages aren't added to Flutter favorites very often. So that doesn't reflect the ecosystem, right?
Once a quarter, we do a review and of packages that have been submitted, and it's broken up into the team of the ecosystem committee to do reviews on those and work with the package authors to do that, which we're all doing consistently. And anyone can submit a package, and the whole process that we go through is actually on the flutter.dev website. Let me see if I can post this in the chat here, if I can find out a way of doing that. Where's the chat box?
if you want to chat on here, it's at the bottom right of your screen. You got the little
I'm clicking it, and literally nothing's opening up. This is great. Anyway, I can reply back to the original tweet. It won't let me. I click on it, does nothing. This is like great.
Well, if you open up, they're moving fast and breaking things.
Basically, that's what I can see here. How about I do this here? I'll DM it to you, and then you can share it in the chat. There you go,
Matt. Awesome. Yeah, I'll take a look and share that too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, in that page, I just go through some of the things. Metrics, the Flutter Favorites package have to pass through a high quality standard set of metrics. Overall package score, this is on like the PANA score on pub. Permissive license has to be include but not limited to the standard sort of packages, like the standard license like Apache, BSD, CC, MIT, W3C. I mean, it's not like there's no hard and fast set rule on that one, but it's like it can't be private, basically. GitHub version tags also have to match the tags that are on pub, so that, you know, there's a one-to-one match. So if you're trying to find the source code for a particular version, you can find it. Feature completeness, you know, if it's if the package's beta are under construction, it's not going to be a Flutter favorite, full stop, right? It has to be essentially have feature completeness. It doesn't say that you can still have things like stuff under like beta, right? You can still have like a release of a beta version on pub, so you can actually set up different version releases. But the point here is you need to have at least a complete version of your package, right? Your package is not still 0.0.1 alpha, you know?
So that's a pretty tough one. If we take Super Editor as an example, there's the space of document editing is so broad that it wouldn't make a lot of sense for us to call it one dot anything anytime in the near future. And yet we have companies like Superlist out there who have kind of built their editing around that.
I'm just saying that you can see this, right? Like you can't have packages that are going to break their API all the time provide the features that they're offering, right? So they're saying, oh, this is under construction. We're going to be doing these things in our package, and they never materialize. That can't be.
That's kind of what I'm pushing back against. We do break a lot of stuff in Super Editor because we're constantly bringing in new document editing capabilities that then therefore cause reworks of existing APIs. And I guess on the one hand, sure, we could just be on version 53 by now, but what does that really do in practice? How does that really change the situation? At the end of the day, again, this is just one example of these rules that you're describing. I think they do make sense in general, but this is an example of where they can kind of break down. Super Editor is probably the most configurable, accessible document editor in the ecosystem, but for a long time, it's not going to even be able to pass
that. But I'd say that may have the mark of feature completeness, right? Like it is considered feature complete right now. Not that it's not going to break in the future, right? You can't say that about any package. I know, again, like this is just, again, it's not incomplete in the sense that it offers the set of features that it says it's going to offer, right? Verified publisher is another one. It has to have verified publisher so we can like link it to something. I think that's a reasonable ask nowadays.
I do like verified publishers, and for those listening who publish packages, I really encourage you to set yourself up as a verified publisher, just so, because it's just, you open it up and you see unknown publisher over there or something on the right, and it's hard to sell that to a company and be like, yeah, base your infrastructure on this. I have no idea who wrote it or if they're ever going to do anything with it.
I push back on some of that as well. I'm sure, Matt, you remember this, but in the very early days, we didn't have verified publisher. Instead, we had an author. We'd have someone that would be remarked as being the person who owned that package, and it'd be linked to their name, their email address, something like that. Now that we don't have that, all these unverified publishers, you've got no idea who, before you could get to the author, right? Before you could at least have some information, now it's all gone. So I think that the verified should be something that you're putting on top of an author, right? So you can be an author, but then you can also be a verified author. Does that kind of make sense?
Sure. Yeah, sure. I don't technically care which mechanism it is. I'm just pointing out that, let's say I'm working with a company. I'm building something for them. Here's a package I want to bring in. And I look at it. I'm like, this looks like an abandoned project or something close to it, or I have no idea what this person's intentions are. The more that your package can convey, yes, it's up to date, yes, it'll be maintained, yes, it's reputable, that makes it a lot easier to add it to a client's project.
Wholeheartedly agree. All right, what are the other things here? General usability when it comes to overview, docs, sample, example, API quality. So again, that's just us. We apply scores. This is again reviewed by multiple people. And there's a consensus that comes to by the committee, right? Against these points, all these points, by the way. It's reviewed for completeness of documentation and examples. So obviously someone can just pick up the package and go with it, right? They're not going to be trying to figure out how do I even implement this package, right? Good runtime behavior in terms of CPU and memory usage. That's just like the idea here is that we actually try it out. We validate that it's not like doing something crazy or wacky that would blow up, you know, people's faces. To obviously to a certain degree. And these are also, I mean, obviously we have a problem right now in that the more people we make Flutter favorites, the more we have to go back and review as well. We're in the situation now of going back and re-reviewing the very first Flutter favorites and making sure that they're still hold up to these standards. And that can't persist, right? There's only so many hours in the day that the committee has. So we're obviously going to be having to rethink this at some point in the future. But for the minute, it's workable. We were looking at, like, we have some automated tooling that we were working on around this to, like check the some of these things, like the verified publish and score and stuff, so we can off the bat have some sort of idea about what these numbers might be for people. And high quality dependency is another one. So it's all variable, right? Like, it's all subjective, but that's why we have a committee, right? And I think when it comes to, like, the dependencies, again, it's like you can't suddenly have a dependency that's really old or unmaintained. Oh, I don't know. I'm trying this again, apples to apples, right? But the point here is to try and keep the quality level up of the package that we're letting as a Flutter favorite. A lot of the time in review that we found that there's packages that people have got dependencies that people have on their plugins or packages they're not even using anymore. Or another one was they use one function, which ends up being something really, really simple that they could have just done inside their own package, right? That, you know, we try and keep, again, it's about keeping those dependencies down, especially in library code, where you suddenly get into dependency hell if you're not too careful, right? So keeping those under control is also part of this and very important.
Right. Yeah. So, Simon, how many submissions do you get per quarter? Do you know?
I would have to go look. I think I literally would have to go look. Let me see if I can get out.
While Simon's doing that, I do want to welcome Mike to the stage. Mike, you're welcome to jump in at any time for any purpose.
Hi, thanks, Matt. And hi, everybody. This is Mike. I just thought, since you were talking about Flutter favorites on Pub, that maybe you want to hear from somebody that has a Flutter favorite package.
I would love, to hear your feedback, Mike, on what you felt was what you got from the committee member that helped you review at the time.
Certainly. I mean, it was quite incidental that I came to the point of receiving a Flutter favorite tag, and I didn't submit the package myself, and I just found it out when it was released in a Medium article. I had no idea when it was going to be published. I did do sort of one minor review thing that was back with Chris Sells when he was on the team, and he was probably the lead for the Flutter favorite at that time. And I was talking about Go Router with him, and I mentioned to him that I have this package about teaming that I was doing back then. And then he said, "Oh, that looks interesting. Let me take a look at that." And he said that, "Okay, he might, you know, take this up and have a look if you want to have it as a Flutter favorite." And that's how I ended up there, and he said he was going to review it. I don't know what he did, but the only thing he told me was, yeah, he reviewed it. He didn't have any major comments, and there was one. I had just made a new release, a patch release, and I hadn't yet published it on as a GitHub release as well with that source code package. I always do that, but I had just done it, and it was just a type of fix or something like that. So anyway, he commented on that, "Oh, you hadn't released that release yet." I said, "Oh, no, I didn't get around to it. Now it's coming." And I pushed it through via the CI/CD that I used for it. But anyway, that's how I ended up there. And as a package maintainer, having a package that is a Flutter favorite, I do also raise the bar myself. I really make sure that I have everything sort of top-notch. It has 100% test coverage. That doesn't mean everything is tested, but at least it has that. And it's been quite a challenge because this package dealt with something that the Flutter framework was breaking all the time with every release. Of course, they just release, you know, that this is new and this is a breaking, but it was a lot of breaking things since it deals with teaming, material teaming, and during the transition from Material 2 to Material 3, there was a lot of things to go through and support and always, you know, update and fix. So quite often when I released, when Flutter came out with a new release, I had to come up, you know, pretty much the same day with a new release of the package as well to be able to support the latest release of Flutter. So that has been a little bit stressful during the Material 3 transition. Now it's been a little bit easier. I didn't release a new release with the latest release of Flutter because there was not really anything that needed.
Hey, Mike, can you tell us which package you're talking about?
I'm talking about the Flex Color Scheme package. It has something like 2,300 likes and is up there on number 81 or something that in top likes of all packages on Pub. So it has a fair amount of likes, and I have gotten a lot of feedbacks. I don't know how many people are using it, but once when I was hanging out on Simon's community there in the chat, somebody told me that, hey, it's Mike there. Thanks, we use your package. And that's nice to hear. And then they told me they had 50,000 downloads in the app that uses it. So that's pretty cool. So
That's the kind of feedback I was saying. Like, you just, as a package owner, you just don't know how your package is being used, right? Like,
yeah, and that's sad. That's something I really miss on Pub. You know, the only way I can see is that, you know, a lot, I can see that people depend on it on GitHub. There you can see something, but those are just sort of the public dependencies. So usually it's just small tests and things like that. It would be really nice to get the download stats. I know most of the download stats would be garbage because they have had this argument from Google. But it still would be some number other than the popularity and ranking and what else is there. But yeah, so the package as such is not very complicated. It's basically a super fancy team data factory, but it also comes with a website that allows you to visually configure the team. And then when you're done with it, you just copy paste the API config code for it. And then your team and your app looks like what you configured in that visual tool. So that's quite handy. And it has a lot of, you know, convenience and built-in things. And it can do things like adaptive teams so that your team data will look different on different platforms and these kind of things that are quite handy. Plus, it comes with a lot of built-in color schemes that you can just slap on if you don't want to, you know, tinker with your own. You can, of course, make your own as well. But a lot of things to make sort of the visual design for your app easier. And also, I use it as a way myself to offer multiple different themes for an application so that the user has easy choice to just, you know, select different hooks for your app, unless the branding part is super critical for you. That's kind of a fun feature to offer sometimes. So anyway, but it's been rewarding in the sense that, you know, you get sort of some publicity, of course, for having this Flutter favorite and people, you know, they find the package easier, of course. I do realize and recognize that, and that's been fun. And then you get all this sort of course, cool and nice feedback from people that say, hey, nice to meet you. I've been using your package and it's always nice to hear. Like I know that Sebastian, who has very successful application now also, he told me a long time ago that he uses the package as well. So that's always nice to hear these success stories. And there was another guy from Philippines that was using it in all his applications, and he was making like 50K a month nowadays with this app. So that's really nice to hear when you get... have contributed in a small way to these successes.
Yeah, thanks for sharing that, Mike. And sorry to hear that it's now taking up more of your time to, you know, get all the test coverage and cross all the I's and dot the T's. Go ahead.
It's been easier now. It was during the transition from Material 2 to Material
3. Oh, right.
It's really a lot. Now it's getting easier. In the next release, I've already seen on Master, there is the new color scheme coming, so that will be a big
thing. So they're adding some more colors to Material.
Oh, my goodness. 46, or how many colors was it from 30-something? Material 2 started with 12 colors, and now it's up to 46 in color scheme.
Hey, let me pause just for a moment before I give it back to you three to continue. I just want to bring the audience up to date with where we've gone in this conversation. Early on, we were talking about the Dart SDK for Gemini generative AI. We talked a little bit about, you know, how valuable is that, how useful is that. I think probably most of us up on stage felt that it's not really living up to the hype at the moment, but we'll see where it goes from here. Then we started talking about leadership in the community. How might we help direct the efforts of the Flutter community in a productive direction, a direction that leads to a healthier future instead of a less healthy future. Simon was telling us about the history of the Flutter community organization, and we just got to a discussion specifically around the Flutter favorites, policies, and packages. So with that, anyone in the audience is welcome on stage. If you want to ask questions, if you want to comment, hit the mic button, we'll bring you up. With that, Ray, Simon, Mike, feel free to pick up anywhere you want.
I mean, I'll carry on with some numbers here. I was just looking through some of the detailed docs that we got. This whole thing with Flutter favorites was pioneered with Chris. So Chris took on like the charge at the very beginning. Obviously, don't get me wrong, Flutter favorites has dropped off since Chris Sales left the team a little bit more. But now there was a gap in time when we weren't doing Flutter favorites when Chris left and before Ander was set up as the new committee chair. But I just want to let people know, there was a sort of a drop in time when there was no Flutter favorites going out. I'm just looking at this, like round two here, 41 submissions. These were, again, anyone can submit a package. It doesn't have to be the package author. So when it comes to Mike, someone might submit it on behalf of Mike, like, please have, you know, I honestly can't even find Mike's package, but I'm not really looking that hard to read right now. But we have a record of like who submitted it, when it was submitted. I'm looking at some numbers here. Like we'll look at a package's openness to responses as well. Like I responded to PRs. That's another factor that we treat in here. Documentation, unit test coverage is considered, but it's not a requirement. So it's not required that you have 100% coverage, Mike. So don't worry about that. But again, this is the thing that Mike said, like he's imposing that on himself because it's a Flutter favorite, which is good and bad, obviously, right? At the same time, but it's good for the community because then we keep that quality bar higher, right? That's what we want. So
yeah, I did need all those tests because also when everything was changing during the material two to material three transition in the team, this was the only way I could keep it all together, you know, to figure it out. So I didn't break anything. So when because you have all these things also with same versioning, and I take that very seriously as well. That if I say I haven't broken anything, I mean I haven't broken anything. And that's really important to me too, because it's easy to make, when you have a complex package, a mistake that you inadvertently break something you didn't mean to, but yeah, you did. And there the tests help a lot.
I mean, when we go through and do the review on the committee, we say like, there's not just a yes, no, it's, this is not yet, like it needs more work. We'll come back to this in the future. We'll get some feedback from the person. Like we're not going to get it in this quarter, for example. Or the author says, no, I don't want to be a Flutter favorite. I mean, that's happened as well. So I think in that case, I'm trying to remember now, it may have been the Philips Hue package. I don't think they were interested at the time, because it was like, you're talking about quality of packages. That's another thing, right? Sorry, I didn't mention this earlier. I know this is me scrolling back and forth, but quality of packages, something we forgot to mention, was first party packages from corporations is actually a really, they normally set the bar, right? Like, because they're being paid to produce that code and then it's open sourced. It means that there's actually someone maintaining it all the time because they're using it in their own products. So things like LinkedIn, they'll have a package on there, like you name it, Uber, LinkedIn, everyone else. They all have like Slack. They all do their own technical engineering blogs. They also all release open source packages. Those are the packages that actually have sort of quality levels, but they're also very opinionated for the company because they're parts of their products, right? But things like Philips Hue doing the Bluetooth package was a huge boom for Flutter and Dart, because when we needed a package that was really good with Bluetooth. Bluetooth is, I'm going to tell people now, Bluetooth is difficult. Not only is it difficult because it's a communications, you know, system, but it's different on each device. Different devices have different Bluetooth stacks. Different Bluetooth stacks have bugs. Like, it's not an easy place to work with. And then when it comes to, hang on a second. I'm just getting a message from someone else. Sorry. When it comes to, you know, dealing with that, like you've got a company like Philips that have done the Hue Lightbulb system that use Flutter app as their main app, and they built a whole Bluetooth stack and library and maintain it. Perfect. That's what the community needs, right? That kind of stuff. And it's very difficult for an independent like Mike, for example, to spend that extra time I'm sorry, I'm speaking for you here, Mike, but I'm sure you I probably agree, but spending that extra time on, like, you know, working on a package in their spare time and not for money or for work, you know, that's a lot more difficult as a ask from someone. So that's also around where that kind of quality level package and pub changes. Anyway, that was kind of a side note on off Flutter favorites, right? But I just wanted to kind of like mention that there was that's the kind of thing in the ecosystem as well that's kind of important, right? That we get more big companies to release more open source packages, right? I think it just benefits everyone. Yeah, and I think we did do a round on like the community packages. So the community, Flutter community, also took over. I don't know if people know this, but the what we call the plus packages. These were first party packages from the Flutter team that no longer wanted to or couldn't maintain, or felt that they didn't need to maintain, whatever the reason is, but they wanted to give those first party packages to the community. And that's where the Plus Plugins ecosystem comes from. I'm going to post a link on the chat. Let's see. You know what? It won't work for me. So I'm going to ask Matt if you can forward it on. It's plus.fluttercommunity.dev. And these are the Plus packages. So these were first-party packages. We had battery connectivity, device info, network info, package info, sensors share, Android Alarm Manager, and Android Intent. These packages only ever existed for Android and iOS when we took them on. And then as community and contributions from the other maintainers, we managed to get in there web, Mac, Linux, and Windows compatibility for most of them. Some of them don't make sense. So that's why they have the dash on there. They don't make sense on that platform. Or that we don't have support yet on the platform. So sensors, for example, on Mac, Linux, and Windows isn't implemented. If you want to implement them, get in touch. but I think that's the kind of, there's a big push around getting those as Flutter favorites as well. And we maintain those as a community. There's also like invites packages and various things like that, like around Fire. Those were the Firebase packages at the time. So like Firebase Core, Firebase Auth, stuff like
Simon,
that.
Can I mention something in here that I'd like to mm-hmm. see? And this may be a little bit contentious, but let me start with the motivation here. A while back I was doing some stuff with PDFs, or maybe it was even EPUB. And I went to, my question was, what at this moment is the most mature EPUB package, if one exists at all, on pub? And that's where I ended up going through so many pages of partially implemented things. I couldn't tell which one was better than the others. So here's two things that were true at the same time. None of those packages were particularly holistic or well-built or well-documented. At the same time, some of them were better than others, and I needed to try one. I would like to see some kind of community-managed ranking that essentially says, right now, at this moment, we believe this package is your best bet for problem X. So that even though none of those packages would meet any of the criteria really for Flutter favorites, it would be helpful if there were some directory that said, well, if you're trying to do EPUB, of those 50 random packages, this one is your best bet. This one does the most. This one seems to be the most maintained. And so even though it doesn't hit that higher standard, there are so many problems for which you have to try something and you just have no idea which one it is. And you end up spending days and weeks trying all 50 packages. Well, you know, why can't that happen one time for the whole community and the rest of us know, okay, this one right here is probably your best bet?
I guess that the likes are supposed to do that. But since pub is so poor at categorizing things, it doesn't really help you to find the ones with the highest likes. So a small little thing that helps with that is Flutter Gems, since it has quite nice categories. And there you can at least see which one has the highest likes in a category.
I'm actually going to step in and say most people don't realize that pub actually has categories now.
Has the tags, yes.
Yeah. So it allows people to tag, and then you can then find packages with the same tag, right? And yes. You know, this is reasonably new
and not using it yet.
That's the problem, right? Right. You have to get all the people to update, right? Or, and again, it's about like that, you know, crowdfunding. So as I said, like crowdsourcing, this kind of like feedback from people and trying to get it all in one place. And there's no reason why the community couldn't come together and build something like that. Like, you know, the data is available. It can be had. But it just all takes time, and then who maintains that list? Let's say today one of those EPUB packages that Matt was looking at, there's five of them, and one of them we found the best one at the time, and then one of them becomes better now, right? One becomes way better documentation. They add all this stuff. Who then updates that list, right? Like it has to be crowdsourced because it's just too much of a bigger task otherwise.
Yeah, I will just point out, in a moment, I'll let Tirth speak. He just came up on stage. But I just want to point out that neither of those things, I think, would solve this problem for me in most cases for two reasons. Reason number one, the category isn't the problem. The pub search fairly correctly finds the category of packages I'm looking for. Likes doesn't solve it because my guess is if you looked at all of pub, you're going to find a bimodal distribution. There are certain problems that are incredibly common, incredibly popular, lots of likes. And then there's all the rest where almost nobody likes it, almost nobody uses it, but somebody uses it and somebody needs it. So looking at the likes in that regard, I doubt the likes would help with EPUB. It's such a niche kind of problem. Mm-hmm. So we're back in a situation where there's just no way to tell which of those is most likely to give me a head start.
Yeah. I mean, this is why I think like community moderation comes into play. And this is what I mean by crowdsourcing, right? So, but then you've now got, and as we were talking about earlier, now you have a two-tier process, right? You have people that are trusted, people that are maybe they have the general public that are not trusted, as it were. So the trusted moderators are allowed to maybe mark this package as being a duplicate of another or downvote it or hide it from search, or I don't know, like maybe that's not the moderation things that are available, but at least downvoting on things and like giving them some sort of like level in the search that you can come along and go, oh, this has been downvoted or has been. I actually said about this, and it's quite difficult, but comments, I think being able to leave comments on pub packages may also help. But I'm dubious about that. But maybe there's that kind of at least kind of like, being able to say like, I tried this package, it didn't work for me, I had these problems, right? Like that's maybe feedback that can be had on pub. But again, it is long-winded for us to, as you said, Matt, to do a review of packages, to find the package. And we base that off of other people's suggestions on pub. And it's only going to become a larger problem as there's more packages being published, right? So, we're actively looking for solutions. I think the whole community is.
Tirth, do you want to jump in? Then we'll go to Ray. And then I'd like to follow up with one more point there with Simon.
Yeah, cool. Hi, everyone. So since we are talking about pub packages, I found out one package which was updated, I think, 2 years back. But it still has full points actually on pub, which is 140 out of 140. So I'm not sure how can it be possible. I'll post a link.
Right. The PANA score is nothing about when it's updated. It has no relevance to it. As I was saying earlier, okay. The point here is you can have a package that fully meets its requirements of functionality, but doesn't need updating, right? So in which case, it should still have a full PANA score. The PANA score is open. If you go to the scores page on pub, you'll find the details of why it was commented 140. So if you go to the scores page, it literally breaks down the score and what they can receive and why they received it. Feel free to link it. I just want to let you know.
No, got it. Okay, I didn't know that. Actually, I'm not even sure if this package needs an update or not, but I was surprised to see the full points. Yeah, cool. Got it. Yeah.
Okay.
You're correct. Yeah. Yeah, that's it from my day. Thanks.
Hey, Simon. The reason I was asking about the number of packages submitted, so you said around like 45 or so, 43. That's really helpful to know. So right now there are 73 Flutter favorite packages. And it's been at that number for quite a while. And you gave a reason for that because, like, once Chris Sells left, you know, it was put on pause. So
can we expect
to see a lot more Flutter favorite packages?
Yeah, we were doing around quite regularly. And then I think I need to actually have a look at this here. Yeah, so the last round, I think, why haven't I got dates on this? Where are my dates gone? For example, there was, the last review, there was 32 candidate submissions, and that also had another, there's 91 in total, including dependencies that we had to review. That included Flame. That was the last push. That included Flame, RiverPod, FPDart, a bunch of other ones that were submitted. We're getting together next round at the moment. We've had a few nominations as of this is the end of last year. So we haven't had one this year yet. So we might miss the first quarter. It's been quite busy for quite a few people. But I suspect we'll be doing it at this rate. But looks at this, we'll probably be doing one second quarter.
Okay, that's good info to know. Personally, from my viewpoint on the Flutter favorite is I understand it's like this curated badge and the team, the committee, you do put a lot of effort into reviewing it. Definitely respect that. In terms of like the broader ecosystem problems, I don't know if Flutter favorites, I don't think Flutter favorites solves the broader ecosystem problems. What I'll probably be trying to maybe push on a bit or float the idea around, initially I'll be floating this idea around, is if we can set up a paid pub.dev, a paid package repo for Flutter. I think that initially while the pub.dev, it started free, it's great. We're at the point of Flutter's life cycle where it makes a lot of sense to allow people to charge for payment for usage of their packages. Because otherwise you have people maintaining very complex audio packages that takes, you know, hundreds of hours that are used by a lot of people, and you're forcing them to do it for free, essentially. Essentially for free, which we're getting to the point where it feels a lot of this is not attractive anymore, and it's unsustainable. So let me break that down a little bit further. So in the early days when Flutter, you know, just started, when you have an early language ecosystem, a lot of the early adopters are willing to come in and build packages for free. For example, my responsive framework, I put, you know, over 1,000 hours into that, and I did it all for free because I wanted a solution for myself, there was incentive to share it. So I shared it. It got, you know, a lot of likes, and a lot of people really like it. And there was an audience for that. But now there's not room for that anymore, because my package, if you search for responsiveness or, you know, any types of like keywords in that area, now you have like 10 packages that are all competing, essentially. So the incentive for someone to come in and build something new, in my mind, it seems to be a lot lower, especially because there are now incumbents. So to me, it seems like the incentives, and to keep like the ecosystem alive, there has to be new incentives. And one way in a mature ecosystem that that could, you know, introduce new incentives is by allowing people to charge for their packages. And that would also, in my mind, I think, motivate the development of more niche and less user and less rewarding packages, because all the general packages like the bimodal distribution that Matt talked about, those are all pretty much covered. So now we're extending the coverage of the package ecosystem into these more niche areas, say like PDF or EPUB, and there should be some incentive there.
So Ray, obviously I can speak a bit to this, given that I do have a team that explicitly builds open source packages professionally for compensation. So those that aren't already familiar, I run the Flutter Bounty Hunters. At the Flutter Bounty Hunters, we only work on open source Flutter and Dart packages. And we do a bit of charity from time to time, but we also recruit funding clients. So for example, Superlist is the primary funder for our work on Super Editor and the related packages. So in this, I'm all in support of developers who do valuable work getting paid for the valuable work. In fact, Ray, perhaps next week we should title our space, "Is Open Source a Tool or a Religion?" Because there are so many people who view open source as this kind of cultural value-based thing where you're supposed to go do it for free, and how dare you charge for anything. But on the technical merits, I do want to address the idea of paying for packages. There are some trade-offs here. So first, if someone is paying to use a package, it's going to be pretty tough for that to be an open source package. Because even if you have some licensing in there, it's just going to be real easy for someone to copy that code either into their proprietary project that you can't even see they copied it, or for someone to kind of sneakily fork it, and then maybe they adjust enough details to not be covered by the legal standards, and now they're providing your work for free, or they do it in a country that doesn't honor intellectual property laws. The route that we've taken at the Flutter Bounty Hunters to try to kind of avoid all those complexities is we just say, look, those companies out there who can actually value from this ability, Ray, you brought up audio. So let's just say real-time audio synthesis. Your companies out there that you need real-time audio synthesis. Well, there's 3 or 4 or 5 of you. Come to the Flutter Bounty Hunters, pay us by the hour to build an open source real-time audio synthesis package that will solve all of your problems. And because there are 5 of you that need it, we will divide our price into fifths. Each of you only pays 1/5. So every one of you gets an 80% discount on the functionality. All of you get what you want, and it's open source for the rest of the community. So nobody ever has to solve that problem again. It's done. That's the approach that we've taken, at least. Now, if Ray, if you feel that there are reasons why that's not a great approach, by all means, jump in. You can talk about why you think that kind of a subscription service to a package makes more sense. But this is a space where I've been working for a few years now, and that's where we ended up in terms of how we chose to deal with those issues.
So would that be the scalable solution? Like, would you say, Matt, that is the only business model that works, or it doesn't even have to be the only business model that works, that is the most effective business model from what you've seen, versus creating something such as the Unity Asset Store?
So I'm certainly not going to claim it's the only one. I'm not even going to claim it's optimal. I'm just claiming the issues and complexities that I mentioned before. An asset store is not really open source. When you get an asset, like let's say 3-dimensional assets, what you're getting is the kind of the final mesh and texture, which was probably created in something like 3 Studio Max or something like that. There's probably a project file which includes all of this work to get it to that final point. And then the final thing that you would drop into your game is what's sold. That's very different from the world of code, where everything that led to the final capability is also in the package. All the work along the way is in the package. So if somebody forks your package, they don't just get the final result. They get everything you did along the way to get there. So now they've taken the sum total of your work and they can do whatever they want with it. So I don't think that particular comparison ends up working out. And just real quick, I'm not sure how to pronounce the name. Dixith, or Deeksheath, would you like to jump in and with anything before Ray responds?
Yes, thank you, Matt. Can you hear me?
Yeah, we can hear you.
Yeah, I like what you're doing with Superlist being funding the super editor. I think it's a great way to incentivize new initiative and innovative packages. But the earlier point you said of creating a paid pub.dev where people can sell their packages privately for other developers. I think there will come an issue where to use a package, Flutter will like cache and store it in the like a root of our local machine, so someone can just easily copy. So if you can just see if you use any package, it will be stored in the pub.dev.hosted directory in our home. So do you think of any solutions where that can be avoided?
Thank you. So let me just make sure everyone understands your point. When you run a Flutter pub git or a Dart pub git, what you pull down is actual source code for those dependencies, and it is compiled on your machine, which means your machine has a copy of the source code for your dependencies. So yes. if your goal is to keep people from copying it infinitely or doing whatever they want with it, well, our dependency system in and of itself creates a copy of the source code. Well, there's two ways to look at that. I think that, and Ray, you can correct me in a moment, but I think Ray was talking about still being open source, but having a payment model. In which case, if it's open source, it doesn't matter if it's copied locally because it's already open source. Now, for those who want to distribute closed source packages, you're right, we'd have a problem. What pub would probably have to do, or what a paid version of pub would have to do, is create the ability to distribute binaries instead of source.
That would be awesome. Yeah.
Okay. So if you distribute binaries, by definition, you are getting the compiled code, not the source code. So that might solve that problem, but that's not available today. That would have to be added.
Coming soon, team.
Is it really?
So there's a whole system called Native Assets coming along. This allows pub packages to ship native assets alongside their source code. So coming soon.
So it's like a DLL version.
Yeah. So the idea being that you can ship native assets alongside. There's also ways of compiling those native assets as part of the process as well. It's being worked on at the moment.
Yeah. Of course, again, trade-offs here. If we go to a world where a bunch of people start distributing closed source pre-compiled binaries, that changes a lot of dynamics here. It means that there's not going to be a lot of people there's not going to be anybody dropping into that project and donating changes because it's closed source. You're not going to be able to kind of command B in your IDE to go look at the source code to see what it's actually doing. You're going to be limited to the list of public APIs and the Dart docs for each of those public APIs. One of the things, I jump into source code all the time when I'm building stuff because I need to know what the source code actually does, not just what it says it does. There are a lot of advantages to not obfuscating and hiding the source code. So I would worry about those consequences. But Ray, did you
want to... Yeah, that's not what I'm advocating for, because I'm not even too concerned about... Like, I'm not actually concerned at all with anyone trying to circumvent the licensing. I know that people would circumvent it, but the prevention costs outweigh any possible revenue that would exist there. At least in my mind, based on what I'm feeling. So yes, I'm talking about like just keep it open source, but let people charge money for it. So like, I'm using this pub.dev package. If I want to use it, then I gotta pay, $1 per month, and that would just make a lot of packages sustainable for
a lot of the authors.
I would say it sounds like where you're going to functionally end up is right back at the place where packages have a button that says, if you want to support me, you know, buy me a coffee. Because if you're not going to have an enforcement mechanism for the licensing, then it's optional. And if it's optional, again, you can just stick a button in your existing package.
Well, enforcement mechanism would be there would be friction. So, you wouldn't be able to just use what you're used to, like just write the name of the dependency and then have it work if you don't pay. So then you do have like some licensing friction there.
What would stop it from working?
I'm not exactly sure yet what that specific mechanism would be, but if it was a private pub repo, then there could be, your license hash. So your license hash would be appended to the URL, and then if it doesn't have your license, then you actually can't pull the repo. And that would be enough enforcement net mechanism for most companies, because companies rely on CI/CD systems for their build processes. So if you don't have the licensing correct, then your build systems all fail.
So if you're talking, as you talked about, like $1 a month, whether it's $1, $10, $100, whatever it is, if it's a recurring cost, then okay, the company builds this app, they release it, they don't touch it for 6 months, then they come back, they haven't been paying that bill. Does their app no longer build now because they haven't been paying for the last 5 out of those 6 months?
No. If you wanted to build your app again, then you would just pay again. So yes, you can.
Yeah, I'm just
you
clarifying
can circumvent.
If for whatever reason you stop paying and you go to hit rebuild, your app just isn't gonna build. It's gonna say no, can't build because this dependency can't be accessed because you don't have access rights. So just
correct.
Again, so work that in. So again, I think all of this can be done. I think such a kind of privatized for-profit repository could be created. Not even necessarily against it. I'm just pointing out the nuances and complexities of doing that. And then I just want to juxtapose that with the idea that companies that are making money that actually value some, they need a tool that doesn't exist. They can just come pay people a market rate to build it. Once it's built, it's available. No payments beyond that point. No restrictions on who can use it. MIT permissive license. And then we move on to the next problem. I'm not saying there's no trade-offs. In fact, it's nothing but trade-offs. But I guess the community, to that extent, would have to decide, well, which one of these kind of two major directions would they prefer to go? The subscription on the final product or paying to create the final product and then never paying again? Those are kind of the two major options, I think.
Yeah, and of course, there's also the default, which is what Google, Microsoft, and the large companies all prefer, essentially just free labor. You put your labor into your packages and, put it on GitHub, into Microsoft ecosystem, into Google's ecosystem for free. They do benefit quite a bit from that. So that's the default, which...
Right.
What
gives us a lot of the problems we've been talking about. It gives us a whole litany of slightly different, all ineffective packages. It also creates, Simon's been talking about, well, how do you get enough people to review stuff? That's all charity as well. Eventually, you run out of charity. Charity cannot solve all the problems. And so one way or another, if people are going to do valuable work, there should be a reasonable way to get paid a market rate for the work that you're doing. I think it would behoove all of us to find that path.
Agreed. Yeah, this would be really good to talk about for our next meeting. Like, open source is a religion because it somewhat is, and it's not the best one. It's somewhat problematic.
I'll also mention briefly I think I can post the link. I think I figured out how to post links to the chat. Hopefully people have received my links. Otherwise, they're on the original tweet. But there is actually a funding field for a lot of people that don't realize there's a funding field that you can put in your pub spec that will show up a link to fund a package on pub.dev. There's also screenshots now and topics. These are all new features. And the funding was added to try and help solve this kind of thing, right? Nothing's perfect and, you know, and everything else. But it was an easy win in terms of promoting the fact that you can help fund a package author's work on that package. I think there's also sort of corporate sponsorship is something else to think about, right? So when a package is being used by another application that's actually, you know, using it for money, there should be some recompense for that, right? Like whatever that might be, but some way of dealing with that would be nice.
Yeah. Okay. So we've had kind of some closing thoughts there then on areas of funding and revenue around open source and community work. I think probably it's time to start winding things down, but so let me give a final call to the audience. Would anybody in the audience like to come up and ask questions or make comments? Hit the mic button and we'll bring you up. We started talking today about the Dart generative AI Gemini backed SDK. Then we started talking about community and leadership. Simon started giving us a history about the Flutter community organization. And we just recently reached the topic of all the things related to pub and Flutter favorites and also making money building open source packages. So while we're waiting for any final audience participation, I think we can go through those of us on stage and give each of us a chance to kind of mention who we are and plug anything. And then we'll either go to final audience questions and comments or we'll close things out. So let's go Simon, Mike, Ray, and then I'll go at the end.
Closing thoughts. Yeah. I don't think there's any perfect solution. I think we as a community have to come together and work with Google in terms of trying to solve some of these problems. And it's great that we're having this conversation now. You can find me here on Twitter at DevEngelsLondon. And every week we do Hub Day Q&A on Wednesdays, just before this, hopefully. Some overlap sometimes. That's me. Thanks for having me.
Hi, Mike here. Thanks for having me. And I'm hanging around on X Twitter most of the time. So if you want to catch up and ask me something about material teaming and these kind of topics, I'm pretty much into that. And please feel free to try out Flex Color Scheme if you like to make teaming a little bit easier. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, thanks for being here, Simon and Mike. Hi, everyone. I'm Ray Lee. I'm CEO of Codelessly, and I also build the NoCD app, which is a treatment app for OCD. So final thoughts. With the Dart Generative AI SDK, I took a look while we were talking, and it's actually pretty huge. So if you're into like AI, and you're familiar with how to use, like, say, Hugging Face libraries, right? So with Hugging Face libraries, what you do is you use their SDK, you pull in a library, and then you pass it, an input, and then you get out an output. So there is this, SDK development pattern that AI developers are used to, and what the generative Google AI package gives us is that, but in Dart. So that's where it's really powerful, is that people who are used to AI, they can now see, hey, this is, I can now do what I was doing before in Python. Now I can do it in Dart. And I have the same familiar API that I'm used to. So I guess that's where the light bulb moment is, or what they're trying to build up towards, perhaps. So that's that for the generative. That's my comments on the generative AI part. On the leadership part, what I'm going to try to do in the upcoming weeks is I'm going to start tweeting more, and I think that's something that we can all do where we share what we're working on. So I'm going to tweet more about my packages. I haven't tweeted about my packages in like over a year and a half. And I found out that, hey, if I don't tweet about my packages, if other people don't tweet about their packages, then I actually don't know that they exist. I can't find their packages. And you have to tweet it every single week. And you're not bothering people there because people aren't, you know, glued to your package all 24 hours per day. If I see a tweet about your package once a week, that's great. I love to see your progress. I love to see that, hey, you do have a package you're working on, or you do have a project you're working on. And there was a recent change to Twitter's algorithms, which was just like people just figured out like around this week or so, is that they're moving from a quality tweets to more encouraging many tweets, so quantity over quality. So you aren't penalized, your account isn't, or profile isn't penalized because you tweet more. In fact, the more you tweet, the more likely you're considered active and you start appearing in people's For You tab. So before, if you had high quality tweets that, you know, got a lot of likes, got a lot of engagement, you would start appearing in people's For You tabs. But one thing I've noticed with your tweets, Mike, and Mike, you have, you know, like really quality tweets. I've actually seen your tweets less now because of this algorithm change. So that's something that I've noticed, where it's now that people tweet like multiple times per day, they're now in the For You tab. So that's something, I guess, maybe to be aware of. So I'm going to try tweeting more about what I'm working on, about my packages, about my projects. And I would encourage everyone else here to maybe do that as well. And we can talk about some more of the algorithm changes next week as well, because it really controls how we interact with people on this website. And it really controls our lives, the algorithm. So I'm coming around to understanding that, okay, we do need to work around the algorithm. We need to work with the algorithm instead of trying to fight it. So that's pretty much, I guess, my closing thoughts there.
Thanks, Ray. Well, for those of you that don't know me, my name is Matt Carroll. I was a member of the Flutter team from 2018 to 2020. Since 2020, when I left the team, I've been doing Flutter contract development, consulting, corporate education, free YouTube education, and open source development. As mentioned earlier, I run the Flutter Bounty Hunters. The Flutter Bounty Hunters is a team of remote developers that work exclusively on Flutter and Dart packages. Ray, you mentioned posting packages and what's being worked on. If you want to follow at Flutter Bounties, we try to regularly post little videos or little updates about what we've been working on. We have a whole bunch of packages in our portfolio, like Super Editor, Super Text Layout, Attributed Text, FFmpeg, CLI, Cutting Room, Overlord, Follow the Leader. If you go to flutterbountyhunters.com, you can see a larger list of those packages. So follow at Flutter Bounties on Twitter if you'd like to see those updates. You can also follow me personally, and I tend to retweet those. And of course, if any of you are working with or for companies that need some shared solutions, if you need some of these kind of niche packages that no one has done very well, I would encourage you to reach out to me and talk about funding a Flutter Bounty Hunters project for that purpose, so that we can solve these problems one time, solve them well, and then everybody can focus on actually building new things instead of reinventing the same things over and over again. On the other hand, if you'd like my help on proprietary work, you can go to superdeclarative.com. I do offer proprietary development services as well. So with that, I think we'll close things out. If you want to listen to previous episodes, you can go to flutterspaces.com, where we have links to the tweets and we have podcast episodes posted there. We try to do this every Wednesday at 12 p.m. Pacific. I really appreciate Simon and Mike for joining us. Simon and Mike, you're welcome here anytime. We'd love to have you up on stage chatting with us every week if you're able to pull that off. Otherwise, I will look forward to seeing all of you next week. have a good week, and we'll see you then.